And welcome back, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here on this edition, going internationally one more time. We have been international a number of times. Went out to New Zealand about 3 weeks ago, if some of you remember, on the program. Very important, I think, right now for us to know what's going on internationally when it comes to the kingdom of God. Our boundaries are not quite as hard and fast anymore. You can get across these boundaries and you can get over to the other side of the world so much easier today than you could even 50 years ago. And for that reason, I think we need to be communicating. We need to know what the prayer needs are across the oceans, and we need to know how we can be in prayer and how we can be of service one to another. I found that as we get to know each other, we find that the body helps each other. One particular country may have a stronger approach to one aspect of the kingdom, another to another, but that we can be of mutual aid to one another. And I find that so helpful. We have had so many different international people in our home staying overnight, over weekends, and over a period of 2-3 weeks at a time. I think we've had people from every continent. I'm sure we probably had 30 to 40 nations represented in the folks that have come in through our home, through our hospitality over the years. And it's been incredibly important for us. I think it has been a growing experience as iron sharpens iron, and we learn to share each other's gifts in the wider body around the world. And that's why we want to include some of these interviews on this radio program. And today, on this edition, we have Jonathan Field from Australia. He's a homeschooling dad, and he joins us now. By the way, we are going to Australia and New Zealand in June. First couple weeks in June, we're doing a tour of about 4 conferences, I believe, in New Zealand and down under in Australia. Jonathan, welcome from down under. It's good to have you here on the Generations Broadcast.
Thank you so much.
Jonathan, your family, just for a moment. I forgot to ask you about your family. How many children do you have?
3 now. One born just 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so a growing family. And you've been homeschooling. Weren't you homeschooled yourself? I think you mentioned that off air.
Yes. So I was one of 7 children. And all but the eldest, well, in fact, even the eldest, we were all homeschooled in varying ways and for varying lengths of time.
Meaning that your family was part of the pioneering stage of the homeschooling movement in Australia many years ago.
That is correct. That is correct, yes.
When did it get started?
For homeschooling in Australia? Or
yes, for homeschooling in Australia, yeah.
Okay.
When was the movement really getting going? Was it about the same time that America got started? I think Dr. James Dobson was broadcasting his shows on homeschooling, 1980, 1981. Was it that early on when Australia began to catch the vision?
Yeah, it was certainly the pioneers. I don't know if there were some really, really early runners, but certainly most of the families I've met who have been in homeschooling from the very early days, their children are around my age. I was born in 81. So, yeah, that sort of era.
Yeah, okay. Took some faith on the part of your parents to step out and do something that hadn't been done in a couple of generations.
Well, yes. I do remember with my own parents, their story was interesting. They didn't start out homeschooling for any particular reason, except that Dad was a country radio station presenter,
uh-huh.
and his job had him moving from radio station to radio station from time to time. And they just decided, well, why don't we? They came across Bob Jones University, I think, and somehow or other they were able to use that curriculum from Australia and homeschool some of their children for periods of time when they were in transition from one place to another.
Uh-huh. Now, how is the movement today? I think I got some stats somewhere that said, you know, maybe 50, 60,000 homeschoolers in Australia. Is that accurate?
It's impossible to know.
Okay.
And this is one of the things that has been good in Australia, but is no longer good. The government has largely been hands-off with homeschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no official figures. There were only guesses. I vaguely recall some guests. The state of Victoria, where I come from, which is one of the top 2 most populous states, I believe. I'm really bad on numbers, but I would think that there were probably very roughly 6 million people in the state. And I saw an estimate a long time ago that there were probably at least 3,000 active homeschoolers in the state.
Okay.
Now, if you extrapolate that across the country, I don't know, you might get to, say, 10,000 or something.
Yeah.
But they're just guesses. No one knows.
Right. Has the legal situation been difficult at all? Have any homeschoolers been dragged in by the collar into court and does, you know, somebody threw the book at them?
We haven't yet had the challenges that I know a lot of I mean, that some American homeschooling families have had.
Uh-huh, okay.
But the situation is definitely deteriorating. Two of the things that are of great concern, the state of Victoria, again, where I hail from, I can be bad with time frames, but let's say about 3 or 4 years ago, they introduced new legislation. They amended their Education Act, and they said homeschoolers must register, which is, who knows, a portent of doom or a perfectly fine step. Who knows? Time will tell. But we do know that the people in the education departments are very hostile to homeschooling. So hard to imagine that that they want homeschoolers to register because they really like homeschooling or want to do the best for homeschooling. That's at the state level. Then on the federal level, what is perhaps our very most socialist government ever, certainly competing up there in the top two most socialist governments ever, has just recently introduced, for the first time in Australian history, Australia was federated in 1901. So in 112 years of Australian history, for the first time ever, as of the last year or so, there is a federal curriculum. And not just a federal optional curriculum, but a federal mandatory curriculum.
Oh, boy.
That even homeschoolers must follow.
Oh, boy.
So you go from homeschoolers get to do whatever they believe is best, and the government doesn't even necessarily know they're doing it, to, hey, buddies, you better register, and then within about 2 years, not only must you register, but you have to follow this curriculum.
Is this thing already improved?
I am trying to remember the status of it.
Okay.
I was under the impression that the federal curriculum had been passed, but has not yet commenced.
Is there any coordinated effort to oppose the rise of tyranny in as the Australian homeschoolers are concerned?
No.
No. Oh, that's too bad. You don't really have a Homeschool Legal Defense Association like we do here in America, then?
Correct. Now,
oh, boy.
There was an attempt to establish something similar. I think it was called the Kingdom Defense Fund. And there's certainly been some talk about the merits of doing something like that. But Australians, unfortunately, have not yet learned how to stand together like Americans have.
My guess, Jonathan, you know what's going on here in America. We have the most socialist government here ever, by far. A confirmed self-professed Marxist runs this country, at least at the highest office of the land. And we've got socialist medicine coming on strong. We have some opposition to homeschooling recently, at least on the part of the Attorney General of the United States. We've got civil unions, homosexual marriage coming here and there. Probably 15, 20 states have already got some form of that. Is Australia pretty much patterning what's happening in America? Or are they ahead of the curve? Are they behind us? Where are they?
Say we were 20 years behind.
Uh-huh.
But what we note with great interest, and I don't think it's mere coincidence, somehow or other, somewhere along the line, around the time you all got your Obama, we got our current government.
Huh.
And I could believe that there is a lot of deliberate working together behind the scenes. Now, I'm only speculating that, but the push for homosexual marriage is extremely strong.
Mm-hmm.
There's currently, well, we've already had gun ownership largely confiscated. We can talk about the nuances of that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm getting at is that the current political situation in Australia seems to have stepped in line very much more with America rather than being the 20 years behind.
I noticed the gay marriage bill was rejected by the Australian Parliament back in November. But as you said off air, there's still a full court press going on. These people aren't done with their agenda, and it is coming.
Correct. And unfortunately, they're not taking breaks. So it was rejected at the federal level. And so immediately, I mean, even right now, there's at least one state parliament with a same-sex marriage bill before it right now, and possibly more than one. So they try at the federal level, doesn't work, try at the state level. And we've seen this with other things. Their strategy is try and get it in at any level. If you can get it in at the state level, then you tell the other states that they're backwards for not following suit. If you can get it at the federal level, you tell the states that they all have to follow. If the state implements it, then tell the federal level that they shouldn't interfere with the states. But if the federal implements it, tell the states that they shouldn't deny the federal. In other words, whichever way they can get their foot in the door, then tell everyone that, oh, no, you shouldn't oppose it.
Where is the loyal opposition on this one? Are you getting any pro-family, pro-Christian? Are there any churches left in Australia?
Yes. It's very heartening to see that there are people rising up and giving a strong voice.
Yeah.
Let me say this, at risk of really treading on a whole lot of toes without intending to, I find Australian Christian after Australian Christian after Australian Christian after Australian Christian after Australian Christian, time and time again, when I talk to them about these issues, they'll tell me sincerely, oh, but you know, Jonathan, that it's only going to get worse. And what I'm getting at is that they stand up and they speak truth, but they really have no conviction that they can actually make a long-term cultural impact. And so I can see in the difference between what some American Christians are doing in America versus the efforts, sincere efforts by Australian Christians, that just that lack of belief in long-term cultural resolution, you can see that they're not actually trying as hard, they're not being as creative in their strategies. There is more we could do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not maligning the sincerity of the people or the efforts they've made, because people have made stupendous efforts.
Yeah.
The fact that beneath it all, they believe that long-term we're doomed seems to be what I hear over and over again.
And Jonathan, you know that's ridiculous, because long-term, we've got the generational vision. Long-term, they don't. They don't have children. I hope I don't have to explain why homosexuals don't have children and why existentialists, people who live for today and drive their grandkids and great-grandkids into debt while they don't have children and abort the next generation, why that vision fizzles out inevitably over about 40 to 50 years. And anybody, any family out there that gets a vision for having children and passing a vision and a faith onto the next generation is going to succeed.
Absolutely.
That should be the biggest no-brainer.
It should be. Absolutely, yeah. I would like to just briefly mention a couple of organizations and people who are doing
Please do.
Just I get the impression it was recently I became aware of them in the last few years. A group in Australia started up called the Canberra Declaration. And the Canberra Declaration, Canberra is our capital city, like your Washington, D.C. The Canberra Declaration was basically a pro-life, pro-family declaration.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys who started that are doing a really great job.
Good.
Victoria, the state where I come from, introduced, I guess about 4 years ago, some of the worst abortion laws in the world. I think I heard that they were the worst abortion laws in the world.
Mm.
A woman with the consent of two doctors, who really didn't have to have any reason for giving the consent, a woman with the consent of two doctors could have a baby aborted up to birth.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a strong argument happening, if I'm not getting mistaken, that babies who survive the abortion should be allowed to be abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we're getting the same things here.
Okay, so once again, it's like our politics are now in lockstep with America instead of being 20 years
ago. Pretty much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about the organization called Salt Shakers? Who are they?
Okay, so Salt Shakers, they're started by Peter and Jenny Stokes. They've been a fantastic information resource for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And they will they keep abreast of what's happening politically, and they inform Christians and invite Christians to write letters and complain.
Mm-hmm.
I know the people who started it. What I don't know is what successes they've had over the years, other than just raising awareness.
Mm.
And that's something you could interview them someday.
Sure. Jonathan, is the homeschooling movement growing, do you think? Do you think that there's something of a vision for, hey, maybe we should get our kids out of these schools, maybe we should start a new approach to education and passing a different vision onto the next generation rather than that which is being handled by the public schools?
That's very slowly happening. I wouldn't say it's widespread in that there's a lot of people over the country who are catching that, but
okay,
it's still very small in number.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my dear, sincere, valued Australian Christian friends are school teachers, and they're in a Christian school, and as far as they're concerned, they think, you know, what's wrong with, you know, a Christian school has got to be the epitome of education.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, again, not wanting to tread on toes, but I think there's a whole lot more to education than a child's going to get in the best arranged classroom setting.
Mm. Are there some better Christian schools than others? Obviously, we have some. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully there are those who teach a basically biblical worldview and such, but I'm sure still very much in the minority in terms of the population of kids who attend school in Australia.
Yes, and I can say from various different people I've met and known over the years who went to Christian schools, I've heard comments from multiple saying that they thought the Christian schools were actually worse than the state schools.
Oh, that's too bad.
An indictment. But they said there were morality issues and educational standards issues that were surprisingly even worse than they. I think one of the comments was that parents think to themselves, well, it's a Christian school, nothing bad will happen there. So they're not even on their guard for a lot of the stuff that happened.
What is happening in the Australia public schools? Here in America, homosexual indoctrination is way beyond California now. We're seeing them in our local rural schools. There is a massive full-court press effort to indoctrinate K-6, you know, young 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids in terms of the virtue of the gay, lesbian agenda. Is that happening, you think, in Australia?
Nowhere near as strongly as yet. I think they're waiting. Well, they're not waiting. I remember that whilst I was doing some Christian teaching in a public school, and that's an interesting story you might like to hear, but I happened to see in one of the offices a pile of sex education books. I don't recall whether I even particularly looked in it or what the content was, but I'm sure that people are taking what inroads they can, but it does seem that more of the focus is on the legislative side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Once the legislation is passed to say homosexual marriage is good and normal, I expect there to be very sudden and very strong storm of fury regarding so-called homophobia in schools.
Mm-hmm. What about evolution? Is that pretty much exclusively taught in public schools?
Yes, and you may not teach anything else. You may not even question it, pretty much.
You cannot crack that Bible. You cannot recognize the Creator. You cannot pray to Him. You cannot fear Him. You cannot reverence Him. You cannot worship Him. You had better keep that God who created heaven and earth out of those public school classrooms.
Okay. Now, here is one interesting difference that you may not be aware of, and I think the listeners will find very interesting. I said Australia was federated in 1901.
Uh-huh.
The state of Victoria existed before the Federation of Australia. So Victoria and these other states that eventually became Australia, these were different British colonies.
Okay.
They joined together still under Britain, but it's a United Federation of Colonies, a federation of states called Australia in 1901. 1st of January 1901 was the birthday. Now, around about that time, it was Christians who were running schools.
Mm-hmm.
You had your Anglican schools and your Baptist schools and your Presbyterian schools. And somewhere, I think in the early 20s, although, I'm a bit hazy on the exact dates, the state government came along, oh, so nice, and said, oh, you know, how about we relieve you of the burden of running these schools? And the Christians, very short-sightedly, said, we'll give up the control of the education, provided you allow us to come in for half an hour each week and teach Christianity to the pupils. And so they segregated the subjects and said, okay, all the other subjects, math, science, everything else, these are non-religious, but for historical reasons, the Christians can come in and teach religion for half an hour a week to the students. Now, it's an opt-out system, so we actually get access to most of the students. The parents have to actively opt out for the children to not participate in the class.
Hmm.
And that system has continued going. But and this is how I found myself in some public schools doing some teaching. I became one of these so-called RE, religious education teachers. And I would go in, and I was allowed to say certain things, and I was allowed to pray. I'm trying to remember exactly what I was and wasn't allowed to do. I could invite them to pray, but I could not require them to pray. And I could open the Bible, and I could talk. But it was all very mamby-pamby. I had to stick pretty strictly to a curriculum. Other people I heard of who had tried to tie in evolution and creation actually got kicked out of the system.
Wow.
That was forbidden, verboten. And the stories were, you know, Jesus loves you, that's nice, but we weren't allowed to talk about sin and other issues like that.
Wow.
I, to this day, have very dear, very respected friends who are sticking with that and trying to be the witness that they can be in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, I ended up, what I noticed was that my teaching style – was being affected, even outside the classroom, some of the vestiges of these improper restrictions were then affecting how I would teach in other settings. And I thought, no, I want to, when I'm teaching, I want to teach with maximum effectiveness. And I was not convinced that the mamby-pamby stuff I was sharing in classes was having a big impact, although from time to time you do hear good stories. So again, I'm not trying to dissuade anyone who is already doing that. It's an amazing opportunity we have to go into the school. But for myself, I just ended up having to walk away from it.
In this country, we have an organization called the Pew Forum that does research on the generations and their perspectives concerning things like evolution, homosexuality, socialism, and so forth. What they find is a generational trajectory where the millennial generation, the mosaic generations, are far, far more likely to be pro-homosexual, pro-evolution, et cetera, than the old silent generations and the baby boomers. And so what you get is a guaranteed trajectory towards a more of a secularism, more pro-evolution, more pro-homosexual indoctrination. And I think that happens because they set up the education system such that you're only permitted to teach a secularism. So at the end of the day, at the very, very end of the day, Christianity will lose. You know, at the very end of the day, those who believe in creation, those who believe that society should be based on the nuclear family, one man, one woman, married, those who believe that somehow we need to salvage faith, family, and freedom and society and pure civilizations for years to come, those people will lose. You know, it's almost guaranteed that they will lose because of the way they do the education system. That's the way I see what's happening here with the public schools in America. There are exceptions for the 2-3% that make it out and make it into a Christian school or a homeschool situation. But generally speaking, the powers that be want to guarantee that the nation of Australia and the United States will be pro-evolution, pro-homosexual, pro-socialist, and maybe even totalitarian by the year 2040. This seems to be the trajectory set by these nations. And we as Christians, I think, really need to carve out something different. And that seems to be what home education has tried to do over the last generation or two.
I wish that more Australian Christians would understand exactly what you said there, because you're exactly right. The whole deck of cards in the game called public education is stacked against the Christians.
Yes.
And what so many well-meaning, sincere Christians do is they say, I'll go, I'll be a school teacher there. I will lightly moderate this extremely toxic thing called the philosophy of education, which is designed to bring up an entire generation that's further away from biblical standards than the previous one, so that they will let the next generation be even further away. You know, like you were saying, it is designed to create generations of people who go further and further from the truth.
Yes.
And the Christians go in there and say, I can moderate that a little bit. I can be a tiny little bit of light so that the impact on the students in this class is not quite as bad as it would otherwise have been.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't see is that they're using a symbol to bucket water out of the Titanic. The thing has, as you said, a trajectory, and that trajectory is down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have a whole bunch more time left, Jonathan, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about the differences. I know you've been here on stateside. In fact, you're visiting here right now, so you know something about the homeschools and the Christian churches here in America. How do they compare? What are the differences between the Australian home education movement and the Christian churches there and what you see here?
About the whole home education movement is it's leaderless. And I think it's fair to say absolutely leaderless. I don't mean that in any disrespectful way. But some of the key people who would be the closest thing we have to leaders in the movement are really facilitators. And I think they even see themselves as that. They wouldn't describe themselves as leaders of the homeschooling movement, I don't believe.
Oh.
They're just there to help facilitate those who choose homeschooling as an option, which is great. You know, it's good what they're doing. But we don't have people out there actively, aggressively promoting, you know, raising awareness, saying, hey, are you aware of what the school system is designed to do to your children?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like a better way? You know, those leaders don't seem yet to be there. I think they're being raised up slowly, but they don't seem to be appearing.
Jonathan, we call them visionaries, or we just call it vision, you know. Where there's no vision, the people perish, and where there is vision, you know, things come together. And I think vision is the secret word. I'm not exactly sure what it means, but it seems like a lot of people just don't know why they're doing what they're doing, and they have no idea where they're going. So, of course, any train will get them there. And I think what we really need his vision, and ultimately, of course, the end of that verse in Proverbs say, he's that keeps the law, happy is he. So those that get a sense for what God's expectations are and God's principles are, they tend to get more vision and they begin to know why they're doing what they're doing and where they're headed.
Yes.
Yeah. So you'd say a little more vision in Australia would be a good idea. And ultimately, that's got to come not from America. That's got to come from Australians. That has to come from the church or from leaders there.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, American leaders are, you were talking at the start of the interview about how the world is getting smaller and smaller. And so there are certain American leaders who are having and have been having a big impact on the Australian home education scene and the Australian church scene. I know that even many years ago, Greg and Sono Harris early runners in the homeschooling movement here in America. They had a big impact in Australia as well. They visited, I think, a few times, and some different people I know were very well and positively impacted by them early on.
I'm very excited about heading out there in June and sharing some of the things that God has taught us. What would you recommend? I talk about what would you how would you recommend we engage?
That is such a big question.
we'll talk for an hour and a half offline, but just off the top of your head, what would you say?
Vision and fearlessness and courage.
Yes.
And vision. And possibly I should also mention vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds very good. And hopefully we'll get a chance to meet at some point. I know you're suffering right now from Lyme disease, and we're going to be praying for you and your family as you deal with this issue. But thank you so much, Jonathan, for sharing just a little bit here on the Generations broadcast. This has been incredibly enlightening, and I know that there will be thousands of people that will listen to this and will be very much encouraged. And also, you know, this gives us vision for what we're doing here as well. So thank you.
Very good. My pleasure.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've been encouraged by this interview. It certainly opens your eyes. When you see what's going on in other countries, it can help us to understand what's happening in our own world as well. It turns out some of the challenges we face here in America affect other nations as well. It must be a larger spiritual force at work. And indeed, this is a battle that we're called to engage. And I hope that this has been good for you. And I want you to stay tuned, friends. We're going to continue around the world to bring in others who are engaging the good battles and understand the importance, the value of faith and family and freedom for future generations. And it's exciting to know that this is happening internationally. And this program extends to about 100 countries around the world. We've interviewed, I think, people from some 15 or 20 countries. We will continue these international interviews, these vitally important international interviews on this radio broadcast. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring two conferences, one in Washington State and the other in St. Louis, Missouri. For families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy, this is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business dreams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, farming panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including free-range farmer Joel Salatin, entrepreneur Eric Weir, and Kevin Swanson. Join us for our four-day mega conference in St. Louis or the two-day fall conference in Olympia, Washington. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com.